Joining us on Word of Mouth tonight is Stephen Kimber, Director of Journalism at the University of King's College and a former columnist of the CanWest-owned Halifax Daily News. There's been a lot of problems right now publicly, CanWest, with some of their editorial policies. As someone who worked for them, can you tell us what people are objecting to?
Well, I think the big concern among people working for the papers, either as reporters or columnists, is that the owners of the chain have done two things. One is that they've made it policy to carry national editorial. So even though newspapers then tend to be local creatures for the most part, they're all being made to carry the same written in Winnipeg editorials across the board. But worse than that, there's now no opportunity for either local editors in their own editorials or columnists and others to disagree with those national policies that the ASPERS have outlined as the corporate line. And the problem with that is that this is not just one newspaper or two newspapers spread across the country. CanWest is huge. It owns 14 metropolitan daily newspapers in every city except Winnipeg and Toronto, 126 other newspapers, radio stations, global television network, digital cable outlets, the National Post, Canada.com, which is the third largest internet site or third most popular internet site in Canada. It's the spread of its influence is huge. So when they have a policy that not only sort of says, here's our line on these issues, but also you can't deviate from that line, suddenly, their power and influence is huge, and it's a problem.
Why are the newspapers falling in line?
They don't really have a choice. I mean, they are owned by CanWest Global. You know, these are for editors working at these papers to go against the national policy is a firing offense. And if you're a journalist in this country and you think about how dominant the ASPERS are in the media across the country, particularly in newspapers, where do you go? What's your alternative? If you say, I'm not going to go along with this policy or whatever, you can't go to the next town and look for a job in another newspaper because the next town's probably also owned by the ASPERS.
What they can do is, I think David Asper put in an editorial that if they don't like it, journalists can quit.
Yes, that seems to be his suggestion, which I don't think is a particularly good one, but that's his argument in this. And, I think it betrays either kind of arrogance or an ignorance about what the real opportunities are for journalists in this country. I mean, I don't think that, from my experience, I don't think the Aspers are particularly well-versed in newspapers. I don't think that, I think that they come from a television background and an entertainment background and a corporate background, but they don't have much feel for journalism, for sure.
Now, you were one of those journalists who bit the bullet and quit from the Halifax Daily News. You had a column every Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you had a colleague follow you right after.
Yes, Stephanie DeBatt. Just to sort of put one thing in perspective, because I'm also the director of the School of Journalism here at King's, I'm in an ideal position because I don't depend on the ASPERS for my living. And Stephanie Domet is in a similar position because she is, in her day-to-day life, the managing editor of The Coast, which is an alternative weekly newspaper here. But in terms of what happened over the past 6 or 8 months, I had been finding that more and more of the stuff that I was writing in my columns was being censored. It was either, we can't talk about the Arab-Israeli conflict unless we say good things about Israel. We can't talk about problems with the way in which the National Post and global television all are sort of in bed together supporting one another when that may not be in the best interests of the readers or viewers. There's certain things we just can't say anymore. And that was, to me, new and different because in past incarnations of the newspaper, one of the things it had prided itself on was this, openness to various points of view and criticism of itself from time to time from its columnists. So I reached a point where I decided that it was time. It wasn't fun anymore. It was time to quit, but I was going to do it in a public way. So I wrote a column that essentially challenged the notion of the ASPER form of censorship And of course, they decided not to run it. So at that point, I decided that the only thing I could do was to resign.
Now, when you say you couldn't write something, did they have like some guy standing over your shoulder while you were typing, or?
not quite. But the way it works in any situation, I think probably the way it works is you write something, and then you get a response back. And excuse me, in the case of say the Arab-Israeli situation, I wouldn't, in my day-to-day life have known about the Asper's policy on this, but I wrote a column after September 11th in which I talked about the whole issue of root causes of that, particular event, and that was a no-no. I found out, that, no, we can't run that.
Who told you that?
Well, the editor of the paper. But now, in fairness, I think it's really important to understand this, is that the editors of the papers across the country are responding to instructions from the national headquarters of the paper. So while you're dealing with a local editor, the local editors aren't making those policies.
There was like an open policy saying that, no, you can't, you have to be pro-Israel for all of the papers that they own, or?
I don't know that it's written down. I know that from things that I've read that the Aspers make no pretensions of being other than pro-Israel, although they claim that they do allow other points of view, but certainly that hasn't been the indication that I've gotten. I think what happens is, at some point or another, probably worked the same way for the editors. They talk on a regular basis in a conference call with the head office in Winnipeg, and normally you might expect that would not be such a bad thing, that it would be a good way of sort of being efficient and keeping up with what's going on, but it's also a way for the Aspers to pass on instructions. So if a column in a paper in Edmonton, for example, strays from the line that they would like taken, then that could be pointed out in one of these editorial conferences. And sooner or later, as an editor in Halifax, you learn what's acceptable and what's not. So when you get a column in from somebody like me, you know pretty quickly that this is not going to fly.
That's how it works for a reporter, sort of a self-censorship on an individual basis.
Well, yes, I mean, it becomes self-censorship after a while. I think what happened with me was that, I had a couple of situations where things I'd written in the column did not get in because of these rules. So then you say to yourself, okay, well, I want to write something like this, so I'll write a little longer, and then I know that they'll have room to cut it out, and I'll still have a column. And then eventually you say, well, why bother to write about this at all? Because, it's not going to get in. It does become self-censorship after a while.
Let's move on to the national editorials.
Well, I think the argument that the Aspers would make is that there are issues that are of national importance, and Canwest is a national chain. It should have a policy that's consistent across the board. I think where that misunderstands reality is that this is a country very much of regions, and sometimes stories or editorial points of view that may work in Winnipeg or may work in Nova Scotia won't work in other places. For example, the newspapers recently wrote one of their national editorials on charitable giving, and they were sort of chastising Canadians for being so cheap when it came to charitable giving. And what they were really looking for in this was a tax break. The fact was that while that may be true for most parts of the country, here in Atlantic Canada, we are especially generous. So it didn't even apply to us, and yet the editorial is required to be in the paper. If, perhaps in some parts of the country, the view on Medicare or on tax breaks for corporations or whatever will be different than it will be in other places. So that's the problem, is that this is not a one-size-fits-all country. And even though I don't have a problem with the Aspers wanting to get their viewpoint out in their newspapers, I think they have to recognize those regional differences. And I think they also have to recognize that it's, when you have the kind of power that they have, that there is also a responsibility to include other points of view. That's why you have columnists. You have people who may disagree with the sort of the standard lineup in the newspaper, and that's good for debate in the country. So I think it's a good thing to do that kind of stuff. And I think it's a danger to sort of limit the points of view that are available to your readers.
the Astros right now have been publicly chastised by a lot of columnists, and that Montreal Gazette withdrew their, most of them withdrew their bylines. Do you think they're going to learn, and sort of are they just adjusting from television to newspapers?
I'd like to think that. They certainly haven't given any indication that they recognize that they may be going off the rails here. So it's really hard to know how they're responding to this. They certainly have been harsh in terms of dealing with or threatening reporters and editors. The Montreal Gazette reporters, for example, were told after they withdrew their bylines in protest one day that if they did anything like that again, that they could face disciplinary action or even firing for it. So that's, you know, chills the climate considerably. I think what may happen, what we hope will happen, is that they'll start to rethink some of this as the opposition is so widespread. I think that part of what happens is a group like the Aspers, who are probably pretty defensive, but to take one of the answers that they've made to a lot of this criticism is that, oh, it's the Toronto media elite speaking up, and they don't like it when decisions are being made in Winnipeg, which is the Aspers' head office and hometown. But those kind of things don't fly. I mean, those of us in Halifax are not part of the great Canadian media elite either. And we have the same resentments of some of those sorts of national policies coming out of, Toronto head office too. But the Aspers are basically very thin-skinned about criticism, very self-righteous about the points of view that they have. So I don't know what will happen. Maybe what we really need in this country is some sort of public inquiry that looks at the impact of media concentration. And that doesn't necessarily mean that, there has to be regulation or anything, but I think that the public would be well served if we knew more about how the media works. And, a public inquiry might give us that.
A lot of listeners might have indifference towards them controlling national editorials. Not many people read the editorials,
mm-hmm.
to be honest.
Yep.
And they're probably going, okay, what's the big deal?
No, it's true. Not many people do read editorials. But a lot of people in positions to make decisions read editorials. Editorials are probably more powerful in politicians' offices than they are in other places. And it's not just editorials. I think that, it's editorials, it's columns. And it seems to be news stories as well. I think it would be interesting, now that the Aspers now own the National Post, and one of the things we haven't really talked about is their connections with the Liberal Party and Jean Chrétien in the context of all of this. Now, I didn't ever personally encounter this problem, but it is very clear that they support the Liberal Party and very clear that they don't like criticism of the federal Liberals. And the National Post, which they now own, was a frequent and very strong critic of the Liberal government. And beyond that, it was a place where there was a fair amount of investigative reporting done about Mr. Chrétien's involvement in a golf course and hotel complex back in his home community. The author of those stories, a guy by the name of Andrew McIntosh, won a number of national awards for, investigative journalism for those stories. Now, if you look at the National Post in the last number of months, you might ask yourself, what's happened to that story about the Shawinigate? It's gone. It's disappeared. There haven't been any new developments in it. Now, perhaps there are no new developments, but perhaps there's a chill as far as investigating that sort of thing goes at the National Post. And you know, those are the kind of questions I think suddenly become more important. Are we getting the news that we should be getting, or is it being filtered through an editorial bias that says we don't want to say bad things about the Prime Minister?
What can we do? I mean, there's some people in Saskatchewan, for example. Southam owns the Regina Leader Post and the Saskatoon Star Phoenix. They don't really have another choice for getting a newspaper. So I guess you can't just not buy the newspaper if you want the news.
People are deciding not to buy the newspaper, even in towns where there isn't an alternative. And I've been surprised by the number of letters and emails I've gotten over the past number of weeks from people who say, copying me on letters that they're writing to the publisher of the Vancouver Sun or the Calgary Herald or wherever, saying, I'm dropping it because of this editorial policy. I think if enough people do that, that's one language the Aspergers will understand, is economics. So I think it's not to be dismissed out of hand as a tactic in all of this and a way to wake people up to our concerns as readers. But it's probably not the most logical one, and you know, ultimately, as a journalist, I certainly would hate to see people not reading or not buying papers. The other thing I think we can do is write letters to Sheila Copps, who's the Minister of Heritage in this country and therefore responsible for the CRTC and involved in the whole communications business. There was an announcement last spring that there was going to be a blue ribbon panel to look into the impact of media concentration. We don't know why, but within a day it was no longer happening. And the blue ribbon panel became a minor standing committee on heritage, and that heritage committee was not to look at newspapers in its consideration of concentration of ownership. So I think if the public begins to raise more and more questions about this, maybe the government will be forced to look into this as an issue, and I think that would be important.
Well, I think we have an insight into the way CanWest works and what's happening right now. And I thank you for your time.
No problem. Take care.